At First Northern Bank of Wyoming, we're committed to helping our community stay informed and fraud aware. We offer free financial literacy and fraud prevention presentations for schools, senior centers, and local organizations. From spotting scams to building smart financial habits, each presentation is tailored to your group's needs. To schedule a visit or learn more, visit firstnorthern.bank, because an informed community is a safer community. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 402576.
Feeling the squeeze at the gas pump? Grocery budget taking a hit too? We can help with that. This is Alicia Carroll with ERA Carroll Realty and Pinnacle Home and Land Group, inviting you to enter our gas and grocery sweepstakes. One lucky winner will get a $200 gift card to Farmers Co-op and $200 in Chamber Bucks. Enter daily on the contest page at SheridanMedia.com.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whitey.
Tuesday, February 24th. And from the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, we're joined by the Museum at the Bighorns Executive Director, Carrie Ettinger. Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
How have things been at the museum?
We're moving along. The weather has been really mild and nice, we've seen more people come in the museum. We participated in the Downtown Sheridan Association Gnome Around Town, which brought people in with their bingo cards to search for the little pink gnome and checked out the exhibit. So, yeah, with the mild weather, we're seeing some attendance.
That is great. You get a lot of people in there looking for that gnome.
Yes, that was a very popular activity. And I think it also had to do that it was very mild out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people didn't have to brave the weather to go find a gnome.
No.
And no. While they were in there, I'm sure that they took a look around.
Yes.
I mean, got to look at some of the new parts of the museum that just installed. Where are we at as far as construction?
Oh, well, we had the third display cabinet brought in last week and placed, and then it's kind of tidying them up, fixing them up with lighting, and we need new glass doors because when they were brought down from the battlefield and moving them around in the storage, the bottom's fractured on us. But we have Parker Glass helping us with that creative challenge because they need doors on them. So that's kind of the next step. It's not major construction anymore. We're just, you know, setting up the exhibit space, the office. Yeah, moving more things around one more time. That's all right.
Looking at those empty cases, though, are you excited?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, because it's starting to fill the exhibit build out that we've been working towards. It's, you know, a part of that phase. We have the exhibit space with the floors and the walls, but yeah, now it's the actual components for future exhibit spaces. Yes.
I would probably just be shaking with anticipation, wanting to put things in there.
They need a little work. They need lighting, but it will be fine. They need doors. Yeah.
Something else that you and I touched on a little bit last time you were on, this time around, we're going to focus on it. And that's at the stage to reinstate certain education and community programs. Things that I absolutely loved talking to former museum administrators about, especially like their trunk program that I thought was really fun because it hands-on stuff for kids, super important for me. I feel like, you know, when I was younger, if I got to touch something or see someone dressed up as Paul Revere, then holy cow, it stuck with me for some reason. And that history is really back there as opposed to sitting and just reading a book or something like that. So what does reviving the museum's programs mean in practical terms? It took me a bit to get that out.
That's okay. And well, it's me. I've been a year at my job. And then, of course, with the move and three directors trying to understand what the museum did do, which I had little inklings about with being in the community so long, but having like a paper trail or photos or something, I don't have a lot of that. So the trunks, we do have four trunks. The paperwork in there is from 2021.
Wow.
So in practical terms, why do museums or nonprofits need educational programs? Well, don't think of it as like what you just said, book education testing. Think of it as engagement, objects from the collection, activities that get you looking at exhibits or like the downtown walking tour. You're looking at the buildings. I have a little scavenger hunt. So it's more engagement than somebody passively listening to somebody, which at this point with phones and our attention span getting a little shorter with digital, you have to be creative with getting people interested in history, in the museum's collection, in Western culture. It's also part of the responsibility, and this is kind of my perspective in education and training, to do outreach, because not everybody goes to museums. I come from a family that I didn't go to a museum till I was a late teenager and in my 20s. It's not part of my family's everyday life.
Not part of their culture.
Yeah. Maybe we took a trip to Washington, D.C. and toured a couple of the Smithsonians, but it wasn't a monthly activity, something that we always talked about in my household. So that is still common today. And to get people interested in local museums is important. And it is also a sense of place. So even though we have our broad national history of looking at the West and settlement, our neighboring tribes, when you narrow it down to what a local history museum has, we can focus on people or social histories, which I love, is telling those stories. And then people can say, oh, well, north of us was the town of Monarch. It was one of the large coal producers and towns, you know, in the turn of the century. And
how vital that little town was.
So then you can kind of have a sense of place and look around a little more. Even though that town is gone, that field is still there. And that's interpretive signs, the digital app that the land trust has with that driving tour. These are just samples of how to kind of make sure that that doesn't disappear.
Yeah, and you make it interactive, so people are excited about it. One thing that I think about is that Black Diamond tour.
Yes.
I mean, that's very much on your phone. You could assign one of your teenagers, hey, it's your job in the back to make sure we're going in the right direction, and you've got all this information you got to give us.
Right.
Interactive, maybe with a family. I mean, that could be something pretty fun.
Right, and it has local stories, personal stories. It also plays polka music as you're driving to the next site. So it has all kinds of forms of interactive different cultures that came here for jobs. So yes, those are all kind of the importance of the practical sense, but doing it creatively.
And you're so well known for Explore History. When you were with Sheridan Community Land Trust, people really love that program. You came up with a lot of great ideas. Of course, you know, accepted feedback from the community. Hey, let's focus on this subject or that subject. And things that people probably wouldn't have even approached on their own suddenly became so interesting and engaging, and they wanted to go look at things after the program, and so they sought out information on their own. How do we take kind of that environment, that educational interactive format, and take that to the kids in the schools?
Well, what we're doing, this is kind of my journey with reviving these programs, because you always have to travel the windy path to find some information and be willing to do that, because you have to know what the schools need with their curriculum instead of my interest. Is I've had volunteers help me review those four trunks. What's in those trunks? Then we look up on the internet what curriculum our current schools have. So now we've decided to just focus on third and fourth. Third grade is local histories. And then fourth grade is statewide histories our neighboring tribes or state tribes. And then what do we have in those trunks? Well, so far we only have one trunk that fits the curriculum. And it does need some updating, but that's okay. And then the walking tour I started because we were under construction and the YMCA and the Sheridan Rec District wanted to bring their camps to our museum. So I'm like, well, we can do the downtown walking tour. And that also comes from previous experience with doing history programs, but knowing enough about downtown to kind of focus on the three streets. And then that grew with the mild weather, and we had 2 third grade classes come and do the tour. And then I've also been visiting the school districts during their staff meetings and reintroducing the museum. And then within that 5 minutes of time that I have, some fourth grade teachers yelling out, are you going to do things about trails? We need things about mountain men. So this all references the beginnings of settlement and how, you know, the state started to form and changes within the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So with all these little tidbits of information, I'm now starting to figure out what the museum can do or offer. Another part of that equation is learning the collection. I've also been in conversation with the Wyoming State Museum.
Oh, wow.
Which has a wonderful education program, and they even do it virtually. But, you know, they're a little more established. Things have not been laying low like my museum. So they got funding to ship out 26 more education trunks throughout the state.
Oh, my goodness.
And three of them came to Sheridan, and this is kind of also partnership with the Fort and Sherry at Trail End.
Absolutely.
Because they're a state park, so that's why the trunks were shipped to them. So then it's about communication and getting the word out of who has the trunks. So on our webpage, we're going to kind of help with that. Initiate, you know, Sherry at Trail End has these, the link to the Wyoming State Museum where you online reserve them. And that will help with some of those fourth grade needs because it would take me probably another year to build three more trunks, get all the materials. I don't think we have those materials in our collection.
Mm-hmm.
But these are already established. So this is kind of where that windy road comes in is you start talking to more museums, organizations, you find out what they're doing and partner on it, get the communication out. But then the other end of that is offering a little bit of local history. Not that we're the center of where the mountain men had rendezvous, but we did have a ending point of like Dutch Henry coming to our area and building one of the first cabins. And he came here to trap. But at that point, the beaver were all trapped out and he didn't stay very long. And then Mr. Mandel, who our other cabin that is in Whitney Commons, he was also, you know, came out here early, but trapping was kind of done. But he created a post office, and that's what Sheridan was, Mandel, before it became Sheridan. And then the story just, you know, evolves into settlement about Mr. Laux and that cabin being moved around to help build the town. So we have a local component that we can either offer on our website or if the teachers want PDF sheets. That's the part where all that can be integrated into curriculum.
Yeah.
So that's where we are now, is taking all these little segments of information that I have gathered through the end of fall to winter to start with reviving the program. And then, you know, I will offer the walking tour this spring for third grade, and then we'll keep building. You know, what is in the collection? Exhibits, where, you know, once we have our six areas of exhibit build out, we will have things that change. We could bring out collection pieces and do other programming. There's a lot to build on, and then keep things fresh as well.
Yeah, kind of switch it up when you need to.
Yes.
To keep people coming back. I mean, the difference between the third grade program and the fourth grade program has got to be enough that the fourth graders are looking around going, wow, this is all brand new. Yes. I didn't know about that.
And then that kind of spurs the future interest of visiting the museum, community programming, which would be adult programming or family programming that revolves around our exhibits. For example, April 18th, the Smithsonian Institute traveling exhibit comes to the museum at the Bighorn. So this is Voices and Votes. We will have a members preview that Saturday morning. And then just like what we did on January 2nd from 10 a.m. to noon, we'll have a family program. So our activities that revolve around Voices and Votes is vote for your your most favorite American food. And then we'll have a scavenger hunt with that exhibit space. I have found a Wyoming women's voting coloring book that was part of the 150th anniversary, and then design your own voting sticker. So these are all still engagement, but they can be done as a family. We had a lot of grandparents bring their grandchildren on January 2nd, which was wonderful to see. So I'm hoping that that reaching out continues, and that's also using the exhibits as part of that programming.
Again, it's one of those situations where we've got great local heroes and heroines who once the kids really see that they, in a way, are part of the history of Wyoming, then it becomes ownership.
Yes.
And that's something that I know, you know, longtime listeners have heard me talk about ownership on a couple different subjects, but it's so important. Just the walking tour downtown, fantastic idea. Something that I really wish I would have had an opportunity, when I was younger to do, whatever town that happened to be that I was living in at the time.
Right.
Because then you walk around. You learn this history about streets, about museums. Why is it named this? Why is that building, you know, the same that it's been my entire life? Why is it not changed?
And why is that important?
And why is it important? Exactly. Right. Now put some context to it. And again, that ownership creates an interest. You know, this is my town. And I want to know my history to my town. Where did Sheridan come from? Where did Sheridan County come from? All these things just don't sprout out of the ground. There's a lot of work behind this stuff.
Right. Well, when I first moved here in the summer of 2019, it was very exciting to see that you had your local theater on Main Street. Because back in Newark, Delaware, they tore down that theater a long time ago when I was a little girl. So, but I was like, wow, they still have their theater. They must really enjoy live performance, keeping that alive here and not building a shopping mall.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was very exciting for me to see.
A reflection of local culture.
Yes.
Upon visitors and newcomers to kind of, and you're not going to get everything in one, you know, shot downtown. The story, you know, you just told, and wow, these folks really like live performance and theater, and they've invested in it.
Right.
And continue to invest in it. Now, you've had a couple hands-on educational opportunities for kids. Have you really seen these make a big difference to the littles?
Well, I can tell you that with the downtown walking tour and the scavenger hunt, they are definitely looking around and following along of what's next. I can't guarantee that they're listening to me constantly, but one of the parts of the scavenger hunt is counting the horses in the Bernard Thomas mural that's on Hospital Pharmacy.
Beautiful.
And I love listening to those conversations because some of the white horses are so faded. They're like ghost horses in the background. So there's this little convergence of how many did you get? How many do you see? And we spend a lot of time there. So those conversations are very nice to hear. I don't intervene, but I just kind of listen. I give the background information. It's our oldest wooden building on Main Street, and we talk about the changes of wooden structures to brick to stone structures. So,
and the kids talk among themselves.
Yes, with finding things. Yeah.
It creates a memory, Carrie. On that, I've got to take a quick commercial break. More with the museum at the Big Horn. So right after this, you're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE at 103.9 FM. Share.
Some banks answer to shareholders.
First Federal Bank and Trust answers to the community.
Because as a mutual bank, everyone benefits. Profits stay local.
Supporting nonprofits and community programs with decades of local roots and modern online and mobile banking that fits your life.
More than a bank.
A mutual commitment.
First Federal Bank and Trust. Member FDIC.
Before there was a Frackleton's restaurant, this building was home to Dr. Frackleton, the sagebrush dentist who patched up cowboys, Native American chiefs, and anybody tough enough to sit still. No frills, no shortcuts, just steady hands and work done right. That same Frackleton spirit lives on today. Good food prepared with care, well-poured drinks, friendly service, and world-class cuisine. Frackleton's, Main Street, downtown Sheridan.
In Wyoming, we don't talk much about feelings. We fix things. Fences, engines, the weather. We just live with it. But lately, too many of our older neighbors are quietly giving up. Sometimes they say they're tired. Sometimes they just stop showing up. When someone starts to pull away, saying something can make all the difference. Asking, "Are you okay?" doesn't make it worse. It might just save a life. And when someone's hurting, even for a few days, can give them the time they need to heal. If you or someone you love is in crisis, call or text 988. You'll reach trained counselors day or night. Wyoming takes care of its own. Always has. Always will. A message from Wyoming Health Fairs with support from the McMurray Foundation, Natrona Collective Health Trust, and the Wyoming Association of Broadcasters. Working together to make sure no Wyoming neighbor faces their darkest moments alone.
If you want to listen to some fun, entertaining, and informative talk shows, then KROE AM 930 and 103.9 FM is your station. The Sunday lineup includes America Outdoors starting at 6, Talk Radio Countdown at 8. At 11, it's This Weekend with Gordon Deal. Meet the Press at noon, America's Healthcare Advocate. Gun Talk at 2 p.m., Veteran Chronicles at 4, followed by National Defense at 5, and Passage to Profit at 7. Finish the day at 8 o'clock with Bill Cunningham Live. Check out the amazing show lineup and more at KROE AM 930. 103.9 FM streaming on sharedmedia.com this Sunday.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting, and this morning we're speaking with Museum at the Big Horns Executive Director Carrie Ettinger. Now, the museum recently received funding for education programs. Where does that support come from?
Well, it has three names, and of course they have to be long names. It's called Teaching with Primary Sources Great Plains Region, which is our western region, and then it's supported by the National Council for History Education. And the other partner is the Library of Congress to get more of their collections out nationally into education programs. So it has kind of these three layers: region, the history education, and then the Library of Congress. So this is kind of a random email that came. I know, but when I first started the job back last winter, Chip forwarded me this email. I don't know if this is important, but it's funding.
Yeah.
So I looked through it, and they were looking for another Wyoming museum. They had monies left over that they needed to spend, and so I applied, and I was a little nervous because I just started. The museum just moved, and I talked to the two ladies in charge of the Grains region, and I said, well, this is everything that I inherited, and I have no backtracking to give you, because that's part of the question. And they're like, well, it sounds like you need to revive your programs and you can start. They called it professional practice, which is everything that I'm doing, going back out into the schools, reviewing what I can find, the trunks, and then starting a little bit to get us back into the community. So that's what this funding is for. But once the museum is part of this program, we can apply for other grants through this National Council for History Education to do bigger projects, like I just mentioned.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Things grow. So we are the second museum in Wyoming to receive this education funding, which is also kind of exciting with starting out all over again. So that's what this funding is for, is it just basically helps support the museum to get started. And then we'll kind of, everything for this first part, the deadline is in May. But very excited to have it, very also excited to have this support. And then the Library of Congress part is, I've been slowly picking through the big mass website of their collection and Googling things like Sheridan, Wyoming, Mountain Men, territory, Western Territory and things. So there's things like maps. One of the things playing again off of downtown is the Library of Congress holds all the, there were the insurance maps of Sheridan. So they range from 1896 to 1920 something.
Oh, wow.
And they show the actual growth of the town. One of the activities that I did at the YMCA after school program is I printed them out and taped them together. So the kids looked at 1896 and one of the 1920, and I had them count how many businesses were on a certain block. So you're kind of also learning how to read the map and then comparing it to 1920. We also did things like naming the streets, what are the two water sources by the town. So it's kind of like a scavenger hunt with maps.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love maps, by the way.
I have not met a person that does not like to look at a map. But so those resources are meant to be used, you know, to support an activity or as a resource for a teacher, which can also go on our website for teachers, whatever they want to expand their curriculum on.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So that is also another building block for the museum with education programs.
Now, all of this work requires helping hands.
Oh, yes.
Let's tell me how many volunteers you could use.
Right now. Well, so far I have two very dedicated volunteers who are actually retired teachers. And
you got good volunteers.
I do. There. And that are very willing to go on this journey with me because some of them are like, where is all this stuff coming from? Or you're missing this. And I'm like, I know, but we just got to get through it.
Yeah.
You know, looking at things, reviewing things, knowing what the holes are. So right now I have two very dedicated volunteers that have been with me since the fall. I do have a call for volunteers to help with the downtown walking tour. And you don't have to know all about Sheridan's history. I have a narrative of the tour. I have transitions marked out in that narrative. We have props. I've printed out photos for the then and the now. You get to carry around one of the original wooden bricks that paved.
Oh, wow.
The kids love to handle that. So it's, yes, you have to have a little bit of an outgoing personality. You're not in charge of the kids. There's teachers and parents there with you. It's just a love of sharing that information and being able to walk three blocks and come back around to the museum, you know, the physical part of it. And I just have a feeling that by spring, my floodgates are going to explode with third and fourth grade tours. And I'm only one person. So I have a need for volunteers for that. And as we get the collection space more sorted out with moving things to the office, then I have more workspace downstairs. We're still just, you know, in the process of moving around things to create new space for work areas. That will probably happen closer to the fall.
And you can use some help with
that's kind of another part of my expansion. So yeah, I think about the now, but I'm also thinking about 2 months from now, a year from now, planning.
Oh, that's what a good leader does, my friend. A lot of forethought. If folks want to contact you, volunteer for anything, what do they need to do?
Call us at 675-1150. That's the museum phone number. Please leave a message. I will get back to you. Or you can email me. It's director, D-I-R-E-C-T-O-R, at museumbighorns.org. And just let me know your interest, availability. I'm assuming a lot of the school tours will be during the day. But also a lot of companies let people come out and volunteer and, you know, support the community in a different way.
I've run out of time with you, my friend. It's always great having you in here.
Well, thank you.
I could go a whole show.
Well, we appreciate the support and the time and getting the word out. It's a big progress.
And I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, we're going to speak with Habitat for Humanity of the Eastern Bighorns. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE, 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Ever wonder where your bank's priorities really are?
At First Federal Bank and Trust, they're right here at home.
No shareholders, just shared values.
Local decision-making, community support, and a long-standing commitment to the people we serve.
Plus the convenience of online and mobile banking.
Banking that matches your values.
First Federal Bank and Trust. More than a bank, a mutual bank. Member FDIC.
Talking with Bill from Tales of the City, one of the big reasons to choose Tales of the City is food for your pets.
The food that we carry are mainly five-star foods. They're the best of the best, really, and that's what's real good about us is that we know the nutrition value of it. We have animals ourselves that have lived for 20, 21 years, German Shepherds that have been 16, 17 years old because they've been on a specific diet.
Get the best of the best at Tales of the City, 218 West Burkett.
Celebrate excellence in our community during the Chamber's 27th Annual Awards of Excellence, February 25th at the Wyo Theater. Sheridan Bronx head football coach Jeff Murray will kick off the event by sharing his keys to achieving excellence. We'll also announce the recipients of the Community Champion, Strength of Sheridan, Business of the Year, and Business Person of the Year awards. Learn more at SheridanWyomingChamber.org. The Awards of Excellence are brought to you by our Chamber's community partners with special thanks to the Sheridan Press, Wyo Theater, and Sheridan Media.
Hi, this is Kayla Carr with Sheridan Honda. Life moves fast, so should your auto service. Whether you drive a Honda, Jeep, Ford, or any other make, our expert technicians have you covered. We service all makes and models with same-day appointments always available. We offer loaner cars and shuttle service anywhere in Sheridan. Exceptional customer service, all makes and models, same-day appointments. It's not just a dealership. It's Sheridan Honda.
Mossholder's Design Center is here to help you create a space that you'll love. If you're relocating, remodeling, or just refreshing your home, Mossholder's talented design team can help you through the process. With free in-home consultations, Mossholder's will be able to find the furniture and finishing touches that work best with your space, your lifestyle, and your budget. So if you want to change the look of just one room or furnish an entire home, Mossholder's designers can get it done. Mossholder's, furniture is our passion.
When a bearing locks up pulling your RV, that's not a breakdown. That's your new campsite. You're staying right there till the wrecker comes. Dalton's RV in Sheridan is offering a $50 per tire bearing pack, plus parts and tax. RVs, campers, flatbeds, stock trailers, boat trailers, and utility trailers. Dalton's RV, Heartland Drive in Sheridan. Fix it now while you still get to choose where you camp.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting. For our second part this morning, we're speaking with Habitat for Humanity of the Eastern Bighorns Director of Operations, Johnny Law, and marketing and outreach specialist, Denim Lynn. Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning, Floyd.
Miss Lind, good to have you in here.
Yes,
how long have you been with Habitat?
I just crossed 3 months as of last week.
Oh, fantastic. And marketing and outreach. A lot of people may know what that is. There are some individuals out there who probably don't. What's your primary duty out there?
Really getting the name out of Habitat out to the community for Sheridan and Johnson County. Anything that's visual, I have my hand in it.
That's fantastic. But, you know, the one thing a lot of people, I think we've been talking about it for, geez, maybe over a year, Johnny?
Yeah, probably.
Johnson County being involved, being part of the Habitat for Humanity of the Eastern Bighorn, something that I don't think a lot of people realized until recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want folks to understand, you know, Johnson County is part of this program. So when we talk about the program and the outreach, please keep in mind, if you're listening in Johnson County, this involves you as well.
Correct.
All right. Now, we're going to jump right in. How have things been out at Habitat? We've had some great weather. Has Habitat been able to take advantage of that?
You know, for the most part, yes. It's, you know, when we talk about living in Wyoming, we all kind of love to hate the snow, but also we know that we need the snow. But when we have these breaks in the weather, it's been really opportunistic for us to be able to just continue working on outdoor construction and moving projects along. You know, so it's been good. The challenging part is, yeah, it might have been 60 degrees, but it's also come with 60 mile per hour wind gusts.
Yeah.
And when you're trying to get the sheathing up on the roof, we're not going to be up there on the roof. So fortunately, we have enough program or projects out in the Ranchester development that we've been working on for the last few years. Where when that weather has been good and clean and clear, no wind, we're up, continue to work on framing. If it does kind of get that windy, the snow, rain, whatever it may be, we've been able to move inside and continue working on. So when you got multiple projects in different phases of the overall construction process, it allows that freedom of flow for being able to just make work make sense where it needs to go.
Yeah, because it's not like you guys shut everything down for winter.
Nope.
As you said, just go inside. Get everything done outside that we can when we have the opportunity, and then just move inside and start
That's right.
working there.
That's
now,
right.
Something else that a lot of people may not realize, Habitat for Humanity's home repair program.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with someone about this a number of years ago, but it's one that I really liked. Could you tell me what this program is and who is it designed for?
Yeah, so it generally follows the same guidelines that we have for every other program that we have within Habitat. So we're looking at really servicing the people that fall in that 30 to 80% of their area median income. And really the home repair project side is more focused on individuals continuing to live in their homes that they're in. So that can look like aging in place. So if individuals are getting older and let's say they have a shower, say it's a built-in bath, and they no longer are able to really, or they're looking ahead and they know that there's going to be a point where they can't get over, say, the bathtub, doing some of those small repair projects in the home that help with that aging in place. And then just some of the critical home repair things. We've had one project where their gutters were falling apart. And this was actually in Johnson County. And essentially one of the major concerns with that is when you have the gutters falling apart, then all that rainwater that comes down or the snow, the melt, it's going right onto the foundation. It's going to eat away the foundation. So when we looked at that as a project, that was evidently clear that we needed to get the gutters replaced. So it can be a broad swath of things. I mean, we're looking at bathroom remodels, for the aging in place, and just bring in some ADA compliance there if they need it, which then goes into building a ramp so that their home remains accessible for, again, aging in place. Or if they've had any major medical where they're not able to walk as easily, and being able to replace the stairs with a ramp, it would be something that we would look at doing. So
now, does it have to be a Habitat home?
Mm-mm, it does not. Nope.
Okay. So this is almost anybody.
Correct.
Can apply for this.
Yeah.
Now, how does the application and approval process work?
Yeah, so the way it works is essentially if you go to our website, SheridanHabitat.org, go to the Habitat Home Repair page. We have the application up there. You'd fill out the application, bring it into the office here at 44 Fort Road. So if you're headed on North Main and you turn left, say, to go up towards the VA Habitat, right there on the corner, 44 Fort Road. So you'd stop into our admin office, drop off that application. We would then get that processed. And there's a checklist of things that you want to make sure you bring in when you're trying to apply for the program. And then we actually have one of our staff members who's on the construction team, Cole. He will essentially review the application with myself, go through and do a site visit. So one of the pieces that we have on the application is the applicant would actually list out kind of their concerns. But when we have somebody that's in the construction profession that goes out to look and say, hey, you mark this as a high priority, that's actually a pretty low priority based on this other thing. If we don't fix that, that's actually going to lead to a much bigger issue down the road. So we go through and do a site visit to make sure that, you know, we are really addressing critical need, that critical repair. So, and then once we go through that process, then we would essentially put together a scope of work. And then we have a scale of what that is actually going to finally cost for the homeowner. So that was, there's a creation of a payment plan. And the way that works is it's scaled based on where they fall on the air median income. And then if you pay off within 6 months of completion of the project, then you're actually get that reduced 50% entirely. So there's a whole lot of documentation. So go to the website and you'll get a full view of what that looks like.
Now, if years down the line, you come and you help me out, and then something else happens.
Mm-hmm.
Do I need to go through the whole application process, revisit all over again, or do we speed that up the next time?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the program as it stands right now, it's kind of a one-time assistance. So that's why it's important for us to go get boots on the ground to look at and kind of see and be able to forecast out what is an actual issue. So there's been times where we actually have gone in and repaired something that somebody didn't actually have on their application because we were able to look at it and go, hey, you know, these other pieces that you've listed out, we may be able to get to those, but let's scope out for what is actually imperative, that critical home repair side. So as it stands right now, it's a one-time repair. So who knows what that looks like down the road, but right now that's how that works.
Tell me again about the pay. How does the pay work?
Mm-hmm. So I don't have the exact formula, so I'm not going to try to spout it off the top of my mind, but essentially, if you fall within different bracketing of the area median income, then you're going to pay a reduced amount of the total scope. And then based off of that, that formula, if you actually pay, if you essentially get to a point where you're going to pay off the entire project before the 6 month mark, you actually get that entirely reduced down by 50%.
Now, when you look back, at the majority of the individuals that you've probably helped, what demographic would you say that was?
For the most part, a lot of the individuals that we've been able to help have been in that aging in place. So we're looking into individuals that are 50 plus. And there's been a few where they're looking ahead and going, okay, we're getting older. Mm-hmm. And we really need to think about this, but we just don't have the financial means to get this project done. So that's where we're able to step in and assist them on that. So like, there was one project where we went in and we, like I mentioned, we basically took out the bathtub, insert bathtub and put in a, zero entry shower. So that way that's long-term accessible for them down the road. Same thing with the ramp. We've had situations where they can't make it up their stairs as much. Yeah. And so that ramp comes into play where they're able to, you know, get access into their home long-term. And that's the whole concept of aging in place. It's allowing homeowners to stay in their homes longer.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't go into a community facility unless, you know, this didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe I can't get in the shower anymore. I think, well, I got to get washed up somehow. So I guess I'm going to kind of give in and go over there. But having Habitat right there, being able to come in, help me out, maybe help cover some of the costs on this.
Exactly.
I can stay in my house for longer. I think that's absolutely admirable.
Yeah.
When you look at the work that this, because as I said before, you know, it's something that we've talked about, but not at length.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the help that is being offered, when you think of the good work that, you know, your guys and girls are doing out there, what comes to mind?
You know, I think it's just, it's so cool to be able to expand our real focus. I mean, when people think about Habitat for Humanity, it primarily goes straight into homes and us building homes. That's part of the picture for sure. And it's imperative, but you know, I'm going to be old someday. And who knows what might happen. I mean, totally unexpected situations might come up and I may not be in a spot where I'm able to, you know, pay for something like that. And to be able to look ahead and just recognize that, yes, this is a program that I'm helping with. But who's to say that, you know, 40 years from now, 60 years from now, I might be a recipient of the program itself.
You're not a client.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's just really cool for us to be able to expand our reach outside of just the aspect of building homes for people, but also helping people stay in homes. And I know that that sentiment goes across the board for everybody within the construction team and especially within just the whole organization. Just being able to help people. That's what we want to do.
Our senior population is growing.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a lot of different censuses and studies saying all kinds of different things, but there is one thing they all agree on, and that population is going up.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a limit to the applications that Habitat for Humanity can accept in this program, or are you just basically here saying, you know what, guys, let's do it till we can't?
Yeah. So right now, because this program kind of took a brief hiatus, and this has kind of been a relaunch over the last, oh gosh, it's a year. I think we've been talking about it for about a year and really got it launched off the ground, I think, back in June. And that program was actually able to be relaunched because of donation that we received from a donor partner. And so this program, we're going to continue to do regardless of really if we have donor funds, from my understanding. But it's always helpful when we do have those funds that come in that help, because we are, you know, if we're discounting it already a certain amount and then discounting it even more, you know, that's cost out the door for us. And it's just part of the mission for us that we're going to keep doing that. But right now, the biggest limitation is that 30 to 80% area median income. And I think we actually, if you go to SheridanHabitat.org, there's a link out to see exactly what Sheridan County's area median income is for, because it's a sliding scale based on how many individuals in the household. So I would just recommend people going there and taking a look.
All right. Now, before I move on to anything else, would you inform people on where they need to go to learn more? Should they think, you know what, this is it. This is how we're going to help mom get this done.
Yep. So SheridanHabitat.org. That's SheridanHabitat.org. And once you get to the website, you'll drop down. There's a menu. You'll go to programs, and then there's the home repair tab that you'll go to, and that really has the majority of the information. If there's any questions that you have, go ahead and give us a call at 307-672-3848, and we'll try to get any questions answered that you have.
Now, a conversation that I was having with the museum at the Bighorns was volunteers. Mm. Habitat for Humanity thrives because of good, willing volunteers who put their sweat into every house. Let's talk about some volunteers for a little bit. Number one, tell me how important volunteers are in your own words.
Volunteers are huge. I mean, when we talk about the work that we do, volunteerism is a huge piece of it, because that's one of the requirements for our homeowners, the partner families, that they are actually volunteering on the job site in the restore. So it's a big aspect of how we continue to get the work done. And just the standpoint of, especially from the volunteer, for the partner family standpoint, of having that engagement. And it's always great when we have volunteers in the community on the job site with our partner families, because there's that higher sense of engagement from the partner family going, hey, I don't know these people, but they're here helping me build my house.
Yeah.
And it just continues to grow and show that community. I mean, when we think about the Habitat mission, it's building homes, community, and hope. And so much of that comes from the volunteer engagement with the partner families, for them to see, like, there's people out in this community that they've never met before that want to help them. They want to play an active role with them as a family. And there's been a lot of times where we've seen kind of ongoing relationships really stir up because of that. So yeah, it helps us with the overall building of the homes. But the biggest piece is that community.
Yeah. Yeah. Really builds a strong sense of community within that group. And often you hold builds. One thing that I absolutely love is the women's build. It's probably one of my favorite events every year. Are there others, though, that I haven't paid attention to enough?
You know, women build is kind of the premier opportunity, especially for women to get on the job site and work with us. Granted, women build, it's not just women that show up. We have had plenty of men show up.
A lot of great guys go out there.
Oh, yeah. and it's great. But aside from that, it's really a matter of reaching out to us. Denim is actually a great person to reach out to for looking at getting on the job site. So if you're a business and you want to organize kind of a team day out in the job site with us, let us know. We'd love to get it, you know, for you guys to come out. There's going to be moments where we say, hey, you know, we've had times where people had said, this is the weekend that we can do. And it's like, okay, we're forecasting out the work that we're going to be doing may not be the best for a group of 10 people. So that's the biggest thing is we want to make sure that we keep our volunteer group about 10 or less. When you get outside of that, it becomes a lot of people to try to direct and steer, because there's people that show up that have never picked up a power tool in their life. And we want to make sure that they're maintaining safety in using those tools, and that we're able to, you know, help them build the way that it's supposed to be.
Denim, how easy is it for individuals out there in the community to organize something on their own? Like a business, maybe an executive out there is going, you know what, this is a fantastic opportunity to really spend some volunteer hours.
Absolutely. Like, just contacting us, we're able to connect, get them out on the field. And really, we're really here just to show that, like, you care about being local. We all love being in the Eastern Bighorns. We all love Sheridan so much. So it's really, if you have an idea, we're here, we're open, we're here to help you figure it out.
And we can have those kinds of discussions. So if I think, you know what, maybe I've got a whole room of people who haven't picked up a power tool before, but I want to get them out there and get them building and maybe make this a regular thing. Is that possible?
Oh, absolutely. Like, definitely check out our website, SheridanHabitat.org, or give us a call, stop in, contact Johnny, because he's out in the world everywhere. But no, absolutely. We are here to figure out what we can accommodate and what we can work out.
Now, when it comes to skilled tradespeople, because Johnny, you do know a lot of people in the community. Mm. I've seen you out quite a bit. skilled tradespeople, as far as giving their time,
yeah,
you see that quite a bit.
You know, we see it more on an individual basis, not so much on companies. You know, and I think that would be something that we'd be looking forward to, is if there are any of our local construction companies that are interested in working and volunteering with us. You know, it's always a little bit of an interesting ask, especially from like team building. Hey, do you want to go team build? And we're going to go do the work that we do every day.
Every single day.
You know, that's an interesting ask. But at the same time, it's such a different lens when you're doing it for somebody that's in the Habitat Partnership program for homeownership. Because you're working with people that really have a deep need.
Yeah.
It brings a different level of pride. Yeah. Especially when you go back to work and you're able to carry, you know, that sense of pride into like, this is why I'm doing this, regardless of who it's for. Because everybody needs a house.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So if there's anybody out there that, is a contractor locally, let us know if you want to come out and work with us. It'd be great to have you out with us.
And I do realize how hard those individuals work on a daily basis anyway. And you're right, you know, hey, come volunteer and do the same thing you do every day and get paid for. But the pride thing,
mm-hmm.
being able to drive by a house, see some kids in the yard and go, you know what, I put the framing up mm-hmm. in that house. Even if it's just something you feel in your own heart. I think that's absolutely amazing.
Well, and we see that with our subcontractors, you know, that the people that we actually do pay for, you know, electrical, because we're not doing electrical, HVAC, anything like that. But even for employees of those companies that we work with, they have that same sense of pride when they come in and they drive by and they know that this home that they worked on, it's made a certain level of impact.
There's a special meaning.
Yep.
Johnny, Denim, thank you both so much for coming in and speaking with me this morning. I've run out of time, but it's always great seeing you.
Great to see you, Floyd.
All right, you've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
KROE, Sheridan, now on 103.9 FM.